My name is Brent Chittenden. I am a podcaster with a podcast called True North Nerds. You can find us at truenorthnerds.com. And I am lucky enough that I get to host a lot of these panels throughout the weekend. And this one's kind of an interesting mix of people. Because usually there's a theme. But
they could wrangle at 1 o'clock.
Yeah. But I am happy because I when I was doing my research, I'm like, wait, I know work from most of you guys, so that's pretty good. One of the things I do like to mention is comics is a little bit of a faceless business until you go to the convention, so if you guys would introduce yourselves and your best known for, we'll start with you, Phil.
I'm Phil Noto. I'm currently working for Marvel. I do a lot of the covers for Star Wars. I just finished a Daredevil run.
My name is also Phil Noto. I work for Marvel. My name is Sean Galloway. I started in comics, then animation, and doing toy and game design.
I'm Derek Loffman. I designed...
Okay, that's enough.
Got it.
Been there, done it.
I designed Marvel's superhero adventure line, and I have my own comic book series called Rune World, published by Kaboom.
So I like these panels to be interactive, and this is one of your best chances to get questions with the pros answered. So just raise your hand if you've got one. I will get to you eventually. So we'll start off with an easy but long question, depending on your career, is how did you guys get started? Well, let's go with the comics career specifically.
Okay, you want to go off first?
I was working in animation at Disney, and this was back in the early 90s, and then I actually hadn't been really into comics that much growing up. It was more Star Wars and Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, and slowly got back into comics and then just started setting up at a few shows just based on my Disney credentials and started doing commissions and stuff, and then really just started drawing comics on nights and weekends for fun, and then did covers for DC's Birds of Prey. That was my first professional work, and slowly just, you know, built up stuff from there, and then left Disney and did started doing comics full-time around 2002 and working ever since.
We'll just go down.
That was pretty impressive. Let's give a round of applause. That was awesome. That was awesome. I was enamored by that. So I started in comics first and then got into animation. Broke in the field at 29 years old. Had myself an ultimatum. Break in by 30 or choose a different path. Got in at 29, luckily. Thank you. Thank you. Come on, guys. Come on. So I started off drawing Marvel's Venom number 13 as a fill and penciler, and that was my first taste of having to crank out 16 pages in 15 days. And I've never drawn a page a day at that point, and but I wasn't going to pass up the opportunity. And because I made the deadline, the editor C.B. Cebulski at every convention for like over a decade, thank you for making that deadline. You know, it really meant a lot to him because you miss a deadline, it derails a lot of investment that they put into the book. So at that point, I was like, can I draw, you know, comics, you know, daily? And so I started stripping back my style, more cartoony, and then did the DC talent search in 2004 and walked away from the convention doing covers for Teen Titans Go for 2 years. Don't go look at those, please. It's cringeworthy. And then I got the opportunity to test out for Hellboy Animated, so I was lead character designer on that, and then worked on miscellaneous animations in between then, Gatchaman, when it was in development, Boondocks, and a lot of Disney pilots, and then I got the opportunity to test out for Spectacular Spider-Man, and so designed that cartoon, and then started doing more gaming work for, you know, mobile games, THQ and EA games, and I do a lot of toy design stuff, and I do my personal projects under my Table Taffy label for my own personal comics.
Can I go now?
Should he go?
Next question.
Yeah, door's right there.
So I tried to break into comics in my early 20s. I got close with a book for Image, and then a publisher screwed me over. And it kind of tainted me on comics for a while. I did video games for about 10 years after that. And then Sean brought me on to do layouts for Pearls of Pandaria, a big 105 pages, was it?
105 page book, yeah.
Yeah, so he was like, can you do this? And I'm like, I don't know, it's been a long time since I've done comics, but it was a nice sort of jump back in into the fire, I guess. So I did that. I helped Sean out on a few other comics here and there when I was in between my freelance work.
Name it.
Oh, let's see. We did Adventures of Superman. Batman Black and White.
Yep.
What else? Anything else?
DC-wise, no.
No.
Yeah.
Then I did a short mini-story for Adventure Time with Boom Studios, and I was working on my comic RuneWorld at the time just for myself. I was kind of trying to relive that 20-year-old dream of you know, making my own comics. And so, yeah, now at 40, I released my own comic series, and yeah. Comic on the show.
Well, that means there's hope for me. Yes,
sweet.
So, given your past careers, what's kind of the, for lack of a better term, the culture shock, like going from video games and animation in the comics, like and
there's
the
no money in
difference.
Comics for.
Yeah, I
there
can be. I think everybody.
If you're Phil Noto,
you can make some money.
Comics.
If you work day and night, you can make a living.
Right.
No, I mean, I like... There's a lot of stuff I do miss about Disney, but at the same time, I love being able to... You know, it's just all me, well, along with the writer, but, you know, being able to creatively express myself rather than just being one of, you know, 200 artists working on a film. And that's, you know, that makes it a little more enticing for me. Anyway,
mm-hmm. What was the question again?
Going from animation and video games,
okay.
And going.
No, if I was in, you know, in Sean's position, where I was actually, you know, designing characters for animation and, you know, that kind of stuff, yes, that would be a lot of fun. But just doing, you know, the assembly line work on a film, yeah, that's I prefer comics.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I've been very blessed to where. I suck at being all model with any kind of style that I had to develop a style that I can do over, you know, and over, and then it kind of got the attention, and that's why I started getting more of the animation stuff outside of the comics realm. Even though comics is my first passion, when I got into animation, like, wow, it opened up the doors to knowing that there's other stuff besides just comics out there. Pay is crazy compared to comics, but like Phil was saying, that you can still get paid well if you're on top of your, you know, deadlines every day, you know, making a page rate and stuff. But after, you know,
oh yeah, no, I mean, if you can get a good job outside of comics, yes, you're going to make more money than you would.
No, but no, I'm saying comics does pay well too.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. No, I mean, I have a wife and two kids, and I'm able to support my family with comics. Mm-hmm. But it does. I mean, that's also been over, you know, almost 20 years at this point.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Breaking in, it would be really hard.
Yeah. I think you have to come to the industry with like. Obviously, Phil has his own style. Nobody can replicate what he does. He's one person. I do what I do. Yeah, there's some people that replicate my stuff. Derek, he does what he does as well. And I think that's what made it successful, you know, whichever.
Yeah, being able to make a living in the art industry, just having a unique style is unique to you. And, you know, if a brand or you know, whether it's a comic book series or, you know, whether it's doing toy design, like if you have a distinct style and there's a need for that, then you can really make some decent money.
To add on top of that, don't just have that one style. You have your house style that makes you yourself, but then have a sliding scale. It, like Phil said, 2002 he hasn't had to look for work. 2004 for myself I had to look for work. But if I kept only my one style, you know, my brand would have been narrow, but I made really cartoony. I did a little more caricature, but I still have my house style. So that's why I was able to get work across the board from comics, animation, to gaming.
Yeah.
So is there
question?
Oh, Go ahead.
As far as your production of work, do you do freehand drawing, or do you do the digital, or?
I mean, I work with a Cintiq. All my comic art is digital, but I'm still drawing it by hand on the tablet.
For myself, I mix it up. When my kids are watching TV, they like me being in the room with them, so I'll draw traditional behind them, quick little sketches. And then when I'm doing my work stuff, time efficiency-wise, I do it digitally because you don't have to keep going through the paper, scanning. But then if I'm going to want to sell an original, like a commission, I'll sketch it digitally, I'll print it out at large scale, and go tight with pencils on traditional. And that way I have a physical copy to sell.
Yeah, I'm similar in that way. Most of my work is done on Cintiq as well. But I'll dabble in Inktober. You guys are familiar with that. Trying to kind of get back to my roots of drawing with actual pencil and ink.
So when you're designing a character, mm-hmm. are you using a program that builds that, or do you conceptualize it in a drawing first?
My program's right here, brain to hand.
Yeah.
But I do use inspiration, you know, because if I'm just drawing from my mind all the time, you know, then I'm only going to put out something that keeps looking similar than the last version. So, you know, being a fan of Phil, being a fan of Derek, fan of Norm Rockwell, Terry Dodson, I use that as my program, you know, my tool to be inspired by many styles to come up with various type of designs. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Yeah, we make like a mood board usually. If you're going to design a character, it might have like 20, 30, 40 drawings on it. You'll just sort of see it. It'll just draw an inspiration from that, and then that sort of like helps feed your design.
Along with that kind of idea, because you have your own style and your own personalities, how do you bring that into a character that isn't yours? Like, if you're adapting in comics, for example, if you're doing anything for Marvel or DC, the character ultimately isn't somebody you create most of the time.
Sure.
And movie projects and other things like that,
too. You want to go with it first? It's
got to be kind of a hard question, sorry.
Sometimes it depends on the character. Like, there's characters that I'll work on in comics that I'm like, oh, this will be a lot of fun because I already have an image of my version of that character. Other characters can be trickier because they may not fit into the mold of like what I usually, you know, my particular style. But then it just becomes kind of a challenge where you eventually figure it out.
Yeah, for me, it used to be that I would try to flip the script and try to rebrand that character, but that was in my earlier rookie type of phase. But then I've always been a fan of the original character, so later in my years, I started drawing from the core of what the character is, and then I tried to find a way to input what's current, but not lose the core integrity of who that character is.
Yeah, I find, like, you know, especially in the design work that I do, and I'm sure Sean too, for toy companies and stuff like that, the art director will sort of try to lead us in a certain direction. We may have our vision of how we would want to draw that character, but they might want, you know, exaggerated proportions, different things, and you just have to be able to, you know, work within the mold of what they envision. So it's not always just like, you know, at least for us.
Toy design wise, he speaketh the truth. So in the comics, since when you had to design the character for your run on the comic, you get a little bit of development time, like a week or so, to kind of finesse.
Hopefully, yeah. Like something like Black Widow, I actually got, you know, almost like 2 months, which was really nice. So I went through a couple of versions and was able to really, and I mean, it really helped, but in the end, I just kind of took, like, the original design and just tweaked it slightly, because, like Sean was saying, like, the core of the character, I usually try to go back to, like, the original version and then just do my spin on that. But, ideally, you'd have at least, you know, a week or two to do, you know, any kind of character design. The problem is, in comics, with deadlines, especially with secondary characters and villains that may just pop up in one issue, it's like, I get to that page, yeah, it's like, okay, what's this guy going to look like? Just, you know, start drawing the head. Like, yeah.
So, for The Adventures of Superman, DC always gives me crazy deadlines.
Yeah.
They tell me, here's 20 pages, mm-hmm. pencil, ink, and color it within 45 days.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's why I bring Derek on, because Derek knows how to adapt to any style. So I knew if I did the layout, and if it was wonky, if I was off model, you know, I brought him on as inker, but more than just an inker, he was there to put me on model in case I was off model. So we had practice working on with my personal projects, my table taffy stuff. So design-wise, they wanted this kid that can turn into a creature. And there was no previous designs.
Yes.
So I had to design it as I'm drawing that page with no kind of, you know, time to prepare for it. And it's just cuckoo. But I finished the deadline, you know, with the help of my, you know, table taffy mate here. And then, it was bizarre.
Didn't you have to do it for Star Wars, the last Star Wars comic you did, and the alien for that? Didn't you have to design that on the fly?
For the cover, yes.
Yeah.
So there's times where...
Oh, yeah.
Man, and I don't know about you, but I don't get paid for a new design if I give them a new design.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so it's unfortunate that... So you're kind of against the wall, like, do I give my all for the design?
Yeah.
but I went for my all, yeah, so...
That's an interesting sort of point to talk about, because I'm not going to mention names, but I had an artist that kind of exploded on his company at a panel I did a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was one of his complaints that I thought was a very valid one, is that, like, when I do a redesign, if I do it 50 times, I still only get paid once.
Yeah.
Video games, I get paid, like, all 50 times.
Right,
exactly.
But see, that's a redesign. For Star Wars, I had to create a creature from scratch.
Oh, okay.
Just by a description with no reference. So you learn, you start asking the right questions. You know, before you take on the cover, I say, is there reference? Has it already been designed? If not... this is my design fee, you know, and of course they didn't pay for it. They said, Lucas won't sign off on that, which is no problem. You know, you don't want to pass up Star Wars cover. But for another cover that I did with Boom, I'm sorry, I forget the name off the top of my head. There was a bartender in the background. I said, well, is he designed? Because they want a bartender in there, a robot bartender. I said, okay, here's my fee. And they actually said, okay, don't add him, just, you know. So, but you have to be brave. In this business... not that they want to take advantage of you,
but they will.
Well, they're going to think you don't know your business if you don't ask the right questions to protect yourself. So that's what I've learned along the way, is to ask the questions.
Like something like Star Wars, legitimately, if you do a background robot, there's a good chance I'll be an action figure within 2 years.
Right.
Because they make everything into toys. Right?
Yes.
But, I mean, something like Star Wars, I think all of us would be like, that's the trade-off, like you said, but it's Star Wars. So it's like, I mean, I designed, you know, tons of secondary characters and stuff in the Poe comic run that, you know, may or may not be used again. But at that point, it's like, I'd be flattered if it ever showed
part
up
of
anywhere
the legacy,
else.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it's part of canon now.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw a couple people sneak in a little bit later. If you have any questions, just throw your hands up. I'll make sure to get to you. Make sure that, like, you know, we have a little bit of interaction going. Since I don't get this opportunity often with people who do toy design work, I have to ask you guys as well. When you're designing stuff for the toy market, are you also keeping in mind, like, where the limbs and joints and stuff move? Or are you doing just, like, concepts and then it's the toys company's problem to figure out how to translate it into plastic?
Well, for one of the toys I did recently, I had the body kind of... closed up a little bit.
Okay.
But the fear was that if it's made super small, it's going to be hard to carve out and, you know, or pull from the thing. So they had me open up, you know, the pose a bit more. But articulation, you don't have to worry about that. I mean, I have
sometimes. It depends on what they need that time. But there is times when they will show me how the articulation needs to be constructed in the design. So at least keep that in mind as you're designing.
In your toy design, do they go to the 3D printing or 3D modeling?
Well, they do it all.
From your design right away? Or?
Sometimes it'll get taken that far, but sometimes you do a concept that just goes dead in the water. But But recently I did have to draw over 3D models that was made off the designs I did for the toy. And they call it redlining. So you go over and you draw over the mistakes, you know, or things that are off model. But it's not often you get to do that, you know. But yeah, so they do 3D. Sometimes they do traditional sculpting, but it's more time and I guess.
And most of the stuff I know, they 3D printed, like the, you know, rather than have somebody mold it out of clay or anything, so it's just quicker. Mm-hmm. They'll have somebody 3D model it and then 3D print it in house.
Yeah,
for prototypes.
Yeah, because you can make tweaks to those things easier on 3D modeling.
I got to talk to Steve Levine earlier this weekend, and he did all the original Turtles Playmates toys and stuff like that, or a lot of them.
He's our other guys, our table mate, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I don't get to ask this question very often, so I'm taking the opportunity. Yes, sir.
For the toys, is there like a standard building block that they give you? If I ask me this, and you're just changing the accessories around to be able to look like the character, or is it right from original concept to sculpt, so you can play with it as much as you
I think there's plenty of stuff that's been done built off walls. But let me ask Phil something real quick. You've done toy design too, right?
No. I don't think so. No.
Okay. I was trying to involve you in the conversation.
No,
sorry.
No. It's fine. I find it interesting. No, okay. It's fine.
Well, so so let's say, for instance, Spectacular Spider-Man. we create new designs, but they were using old molds, so they weren't looking like our show. So so our team spoke with Hasbro team and convinced them, let's make new molds. Because when you use the old molds, you save a ton of money. But when you create the new molds to start creating these new toys, you know, it's a different experience. But yeah.
Yeah, I've never had to work with existing molds, luckily. So it's all from my concept.
Well, they used to do that a lot with like the X-Men figures and stuff. They just
My favorite
is an old Cyclops and just repaint them.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite is the Gamorrean guards from the original Kenner.
Yes.
Is Friar Tuck in the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves with a different head slapped on it and the cloth robe.
Yeah. But there's a whole forum about that stuff. That's so funny to see them.
I was going to add that though, just talking about the 3D thing, what I've found that I started doing lately is I'll use ZBrush, which is a 3D modeling program, and a lot of times if I know I'm drawing one main character or a couple of, you know, characters I'm going to be drawing for a couple of months, I'll do a 3D sculpt of that for reference and actually make my own reference models in the computer that I can turn around and get the different views and perspectives of. That makes it much easier to, you know, stay on model with everything. And, you know, with aliens or anything like that, if I have the time, I'll usually just kind of play around with the 3D sculpting rather than do, you know, multiple sketches.
Do you do that if it's like, if you know you're going to be dealing with a character for like a couple months?
Yeah.
So
Sean, you do that for your background.
Yeah, so for backgrounds, I build it in SketchUp when I know that it's an establishing shot that I'm going to keep coming back to. Like any good comic, you always go back to, let's say, X-Mansion, right? There's always that front shot, a little overhead or down low. Yeah. You can see through the gates. So I started doing stuff like that for my own personal properties. You ever use SketchUp?
Yeah.
Gosh,
it's amazing.
Yeah, you can create like an animation type of tabs up top. So you create your view, you rotate the camera, you select it, you save that tab, and then you can create so many tabs, and it starts looking like it's animation rotating around in space. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, free program, guys.
All right. Oh, it's free.
Yeah, free. Okay. They have pre-made models on there.
It's Google SketchUp.
Yeah.
Like, there's been times I've had to design, like, a Star Wars vehicle, so I'll go to SketchUp, find a model that exists already, and then I can rotate it to the angle I need and give me my reference.
Time.
It's great.
I'm curious, what's your... Because I know from this conversation, you guys have families. You and...
Yes,
he's got a
two boys as well.
Okay. So what
his
is...
His family has him.
Oh. Yeah. They take care of him.
What's your working hour... In your work life, like, are you 9-to-5ers or midnight to six?
Yeah, and I mean, lately I've been trying to do kind of the 9 to midnight where, you know, I work from like 9 till about 6, take a break for dinner, and then around 8:30 or so work until midnight. And then if I'm on deadline, I'll go to bed at 8 o'clock after dinner, get up at midnight, work till about 6 a.m., sleep for another 3 or 4 hours, and then get up and start my day again.
Yeah, that sounds pretty normal, you know, with my schedule too. So my two kids are young, so what I do is get them about 5 o'clock, you know, get them out of bed, 5:55, get them out of bed, get them prepped for school, and then I start digging into my day about 7:30 up until about 5:30 when I go pick them up. Have dinner, hang out with them, hang out with wifey until about 9:30, until one of us falls asleep on the couch, and then get up, go back to the desk until, you know, however I can last. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm similar. So my wife lets me sleep in, which is nice. She takes care of the kids in the morning. So I'm usually in my office around 9 o'clock, and I work till about 4 when the kids get home from school, and then I hang out with them until about 8:30, then back working till about midnight, and then I work weekends pretty close to that as well.
Yeah.
So it's most weekends as well.
It's generally like 12, 13 hour days.
Yeah. And if you're not doing that, you're not getting enough work.
Yeah.
So we're very blessed to work this many hours, but make sure you stand up, stretch it out.
Yeah, you gotta walk around.
Yeah, I mean, I take my dog out for like a 3-mile walk every day to like kind of get out of the house, relax. And a lot of times I'm just kind of going over my schedule in my head just because I don't commute, I work at home, so it's just kind of this free time to just kind of, you know, mentally prepare my week's work.
Yeah. I guess we all work from home, right?
Yeah. I think that's the luxury of today's type of business, that we can work remotely. I was working for this game based in Germany for about a year and a half. Got to work from home. Can't complain. Yeah,
it's great.
My day job, most of the time, I end up working from home. So
that's great.
That's why I always kind of ask, like, I do laundry to break it up and make sure, like, because the laundry room's right beside my office. So go switch laundry, and it makes me stand up for 10 minutes, and then I can go back.
Yeah.
Also, just to add to that, because I live in Canada, I get paid U.S. dollars. So
nice.
Jerk.
So it's nice to work from home.
I can agree with that one. It's happened a couple times. What are your go-to tools at this point? We heard the Cintiq was, it seems to be the major one amongst all three of you, but anything else that that you would say that you prefer over others?
Software-wise, maybe. What software do you use?
I use Photoshop for coloring and cover, like painting, you know, digital painted stuff, Clip Studio for all my digital inking, ZBrush and SketchUp for 3D.
Clip Studio is a one-time fee, so that's nice.
Super affordable, too.
Oh, it's amazing.
So affordable, I haven't used it yet, and I bought it 6 years ago.
Clip Studio, Clip Studio Paint, they have a EX version. I think they have a sale on right now.
Yeah.
I think it's 50% off. They always have sales.
It's like $30, I think. Right?
Yeah, it's not a lot. And then even the pro version, I did my comic series in that. They have a great pro version. You can lay out your entire comic and look through every single page and have it all on the tab at the side. It's really nice feature.
I use Photoshop. I'm just going into the dark side of Clip Studio, but I have to say, that interface is so daunting.
It takes a little while to get used to coming from Photoshop, and I really just use it for, I use it for inking and then color flatting, because it allows you to just
select
a paint bucket, shapes with, you know, a bleed under the line art, and it's really helpful for that.
It's meant for the artist, right, I say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Just talking about the software devices, I was wondering, are any professionals using the iPad and Procreate for professional work or not?
I use the iPad. Like, actually, Clip Studio has a full version available for the iPad, so I've started using that on the road. Like, I actually have pages loaded on it for tomorrow night when I'm at the airport to get work done. Procreate's really, like, I use it a lot for comps and, you know, character design stuff, but unfortunately I haven't been able to use it for a final version of anything, just because the comics are still printed in 4-color CMYK, and there's such a color difference between that and getting it print ready. Like, I have to finish it up on my computer at home in Photoshop.
I tried to draw on the iPad, but honestly, I feel like I'm focused on holding it instead of focusing on the drawing. And then before the version I had, if my thumb was on the screen, it wouldn't register the pencil. So that really turned me off. I'm a guy that likes to lay up on my desk and draw like this, you know. So it's just, I find it a little more comfortable just drawing on the Cintiq.
Yeah, I haven't tried the iPad Pro yet, but I had a portable Cintiq that I was using, but I couldn't, I'm used to drawing on a 27-inch monitor, and I draw with my shoulder. And so, like, if I have to get in and just draw with my wrist, I can't get the same kind of accuracy, the same type of flow.
Yeah. Say it again.
So I find it hard, but I've seen artists using, you know, iPad Pro for, you know, their children's books, illustrations, and stuff like that. So, I mean, people do.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Like, I will say the resolution's amazing. I mean, because, like, you were saying the 27, I also have the 27-inch Cintiq, and it's a, you know, giant desk space, but the resolution of the iPad's almost like 1:1 with a comic book, so like you can be drawing and know exactly how it's gonna like look when it's printed.
Yeah,
where
true.
It's like it's, you know, like a 4K monitor essentially on your lap, whereas the Cintiq is, you know, kind of the VHS version of that.
Put that on your lap.
Yeah.
It'll crush it.
I saw a question over here, I thought. Yes.
When, throughout your career, have you done videos of you drawing and posted them?
If there's a big demand for it now.
Yeah.
There's old ones.
I've done at conventions and stuff as demos, but I don't usually, just because, I mean, I think every artist is usually like, oh, I don't want people to see my bad stuff or my secrets. And so
I think you wouldn't have any of that stuff, Phil, but...
On the other side is I had a lady on a schedule panel last year, and that is her claim to fame. She Twitch streams herself drawing.
Yeah.
And she was rather good, but...
That's I don't need the added pressure of people seeing me like try to like, you know, figure out a horrible start to a piece of art.
Well, I only do it just as it's a guilty pleasure, where people are so about it right now that it gets you a lot of visibility. But I won't do a complete piece because that's not my mission. My mission is to show you a quick from thought to a quick gesture. You know, and then later I'll post up pictures of it, of the process from, you know, that sketch, getting another treatment with anatomy, another treatment with, you know, some other details and stuff.
Yeah, no, I rarely do it. Here and there I'll try to, like, maybe show my ink wash process and stuff like that, but, yeah, I'm a little bit afraid to show my really early new stuff.
Well, honestly, too, it's like, Instagram, you guys are on Instagram? Crickets, okay.
Yeah.
On Instagram, it's a guilty pleasure because it makes you get addicted to want to post.
Oh, yeah, no, I...
You know, so then if you're going to try to do a video, you're actually trying to... You got to get your camera ready. So you're actually taking like a three-hour moment just to get a quick satisfaction. So that's why it's, you know, very rare that we do it because as working artists. Unless you already have that set up just 24/7. But most of the time, you can't really show what you're working on.
Some people make that their business model, like showing their whole entire process, and then they get popular from that, and then they sell their artwork, you know, based on that. There's a lot of popular artists doing that.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice you've gotten in terms of career or art, or both?
Career or art, or both. Okay. You go ahead, Phil. You want time to think about it? There, go.
Somebody has to go.
Career, art, or both? The best advice you can give.
I wonder if I got any.
No, the best advice you've gotten.
Yeah. Okay, well, my aunt, back in the day, she used to say, Sean, practice makes perfect. You know, so this is my aunt from Taiwan. You know, so she would very be encouraging about me drawing. This was like about 5th or 6th grade. And then the other encouraging advice from my dad and mom, pick a different career. So you can use a negative, turn it into a positive.
Yeah.
So I knew that this is what I wanted. I don't want to hear no. Not that I meant that in a bad way, but you have so much passion to do it that you can take any advice to make it worthwhile, I think.
My art teacher in high school told me comics were garbage.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that was nice when I'm trying to look at that in my as my career. My art teacher's telling
well,
me
Well, I garbage. Remember the first day of art school, I was in a figure drawing class, and the guy next to me was drawing Iron Man, and I just remember looking at him like a nerd drawing Iron Man comic book people.
Little did you know.
Little did I know.
So, my best advice would be from my life drawing teacher. This is when I got out of the Navy and I was taking community college in San Diego. She goes, Sean, you know, so I've always been judged that I wanted to get into comics, right? But this was the first teacher that didn't care what I wanted to do. She just wanted to give me the right tools. She goes, Sean, so what do you want to do? You know, what do you want from this class? And I said, well, I want to draw comics, but I got to do more than draw from the waist up. So she goes, all right. So she goes, well, here, there's a model. Go ahead, show me what you can do. So I'm looking at the model. Looking at my paper, looking at the model, looking at the paper, less model, more paper, more paper. And she goes, I see what's going on. You're trying to draw what you think you know, not what you see.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. She opened up my eyes. So she goes, look at your arm, for instance. She goes, here's a long muscle, short muscle. So I didn't even have to know how to draw that. I just knew that there's a long muscle on the bottom, short muscle on top. And she showed me the relationship from hip to knee, elbow to shoulder, and then the calf on the outside being higher than one on the inside. So just those tools verbally, without even having to see it, I thought was the best advice. And then and she let me have those tools to go do what I need to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any specific, like, advice. I mean, the one, like, one thing that I always, like, keep in mind when I'm working on comics, Howard Chicken told me one time, he's like, just rule of thumb, always have different size heads on a page. Don't, unless it's like a static conversation, whatever your storytelling, each panel like should have a different sized head. Mm-hmm. And I always try to use that because it does, you know, keep it from looking a little too stiff. And outside of that, I just go along with Sean and say, just, I mean, the more you practice, the more you draw really makes a difference. I mean, I would always think, this doesn't look right, but, you know, it's due tomorrow, it's just going to have to do. And up until about, like, 6 or 7 years ago, like, it just kind of clicked where I wasn't struggling with storytelling or anatomy. It was more just like, oh, what style do I want to do this in? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it just takes time.
So, I have noticed over the years of me doing these panels that artists are notoriously hard on their own work. Most of them don't think that they've done anything good, but I always like to challenge that with, have you done a piece, you can go with a recent one or an older one, that you are really happy with?
And there's plenty of happy,
yeah.
You know, but it goes with the balance of...
Work happy and happy, artistic happy, kind of?
Yeah,
well, you're going to get that with any with any clients or any, you know, experience.
So there's something that stands out.
So I'll say client-wise happy, right? I mean, I've always been happy with DC Comics with the opportunities they provide, and without them, I wouldn't have gotten these other opportunities, the animation and stuff like that. Personal happy with my own artwork, I cannot look back at. Yeah, don't look at my Teen Titans covers, please. I would say, okay, so to go off the previous one, where there was a time period where I had a huge growth from 2003 to 2005. So I had two people that emailed me out of the blue, and they're working professionals. So J. Scott Campbell being one of them, he emails me, he goes, hey man, just want to tell you, don't stop what you're doing. Nobody's doing it. And I thought that was crazy. I said, this can't be J. Scott. But it was. You know, he started coming to my tables at the shows, and I still get goosebumps. I can't even talk to him. And then Nick Bradshaw hit me up about probably like a year later, or no, in 2005. And he's like, he actually IMs me just out of the blue. And he's like, hey, man, he goes, I got to know what the bloop happened from 2003 to 2005. And this is the time that I sat in Borders for 8 to 10 hours just drawing from tutorial books. And he goes, you had a crazy growth spurt from here to here. And I think that's when I realized I had to think out of the box of trying to draw things the way it's perceived. So anyway, that I think those are...
Okay. A piece I was really happy with, I did a promotional piece for Black Panther movie for Marvel, so just seeing that, like, being used to help promote the movie and seeing other t-shirts and stuff, I was proud of that one. But I don't think, like, as an artist, I'm ever really satisfied. Like, it's just, I'm always striving. I can see the faults in my work, and I'm constantly seeing those faults, and I know other people maybe don't see them, but I know they're there.
I think what we can all agree on is that if you believe in your own hype, you're not going to grow as an artist.
Yeah.
But if you feel that something doesn't, you know, look yucky 5 years ago that you produced, then you haven't grown either. You know, she had a question, sorry.
Yeah.
How much of your work do you throw away?
You never throw it away. Those are your building blocks.
Yeah.
It makes you, it reminds you, like, oof, what was I thinking?
Yeah, you know? I mean, I keep, like, it's all digital, but I still have all those folders of all that art still saved.
Well, now, paper-wise, I've thrown some away,
I like hearing that you saved it.
Oh, yeah, no, I always...
Did I... Okay, they're over there.
If given an infinite amount of time, do you ever feel like you get a perfect draw? Or would you always want to, like, would you always feel like you get a perfect draw?
I find that sometimes the stuff that I'm happy with that gets the most, like, attention, like, if I post, like, a half-hour sketch that I've done on Instagram, suddenly that's, like, the best thing ever to the audience, where, you know, a day and a half on a cover, I'm still like, it doesn't look right.
Yeah, I think the more time you get on something, you might overthink it.
Yeah.
You know, less time frame. Let's say, I think that's what's great about deadlines. So, were you here for the conversation? Like, we had to do the Superman comic. So, when you have that, you know, believable schedule, you'll find a way to make it happen. Yeah, there was some illustration there that just wasn't, you know, like a winner, but the walkway was that I've never laid out a comic so fast in my life and made a deadline, and he's never inked a comic so fast and kept me on model. And it was...
Well, for RimWorld, I had to write, draw, color, and an issue on top of my freelance work in 2 months. So it was insane. Like, but I was proud to do it in that amount of time. So I think it's like having infinite amount of time, I don't know if I'd get it done. Yeah. Like, so I think that, like, that mindset, I don't think about, like, would it ever be perfect? Probably not. I don't know. Because I'd probably want to grow. After seeing that drawing, I'd probably be thinking, I want to do better. I don't know. That's just the mindset.
I do have one thing I was pretty proud about. Well, I have many, but this one particularly. It was for the Harley Quinn April Fool's special. So Jim Lee requested me to draw the dream sequence. They gave me 30 days to pencil, ink, and color. That was 11 pages. But I kept a quality up that I never thought I could do because I've always feared of doing a comic myself, trying to be a model. But you got to put away the fear sometimes and just go for it. And, yeah, it was pretty crazy what you can do. And I caught the bug, you know, ever since to keep doing it.
Yeah.
I imagine when Jim Lee calls you up, too, that's a
well,
little
he didn't
bit
actually,
like...
Yeah, I wish he called me up. No. I'll tell you what. Funny story. One, so he knows Ryan Bishman very well.
This is Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Jim Lee.
No, my editor called me and he goes, Jim Lee is requesting you to be on this book. So I actually know Jim on a personal level, but not like.
Not where he's calling you.
Right.
He's not texting you.
Right. So I had a booth in San Diego and I was setting up and I hear somebody talking to my booth mate, Ryan Bishman. And so, I was like, man, that voice sounds familiar, but I got to set up our booth for Comic-Con. And then, I hear, hey, what's up, Sean? You know, and then I turn around and I said, who said that? And it was Jim Lee walking away. I said, dang it. I said, Ryan. He goes, well, you know him. I said, man, not like that. Yeah, I would have gotten giddy, sweated like crazy. But, yeah, but it's not every day, you know, you get the man to say hey to you. So it was a nice feeling.
I was curious, given how you said you quickly...
She's at 5 minutes.
Yeah, I got it. I got a timer going. All
right.
Phil, what's the quickest you've turned in a cover?
I think I did a Black Widow, one of the Black Widow covers. I probably did in an afternoon, maybe 4 hours.
Oh, my gosh. You're nuts.
And, I mean, that's not ideal. That was like, we didn't realize the book's double shipping or, you know, it was some
I assumed it was a last minute.
Yeah.
I had to do 6 covers in 2 weeks, pencil, ink, and color. Yeah, it was.
And
I had to be on model with the Teen Titans Go style for their very covers a few years ago.
Oh.
And I had to create the look of characters that weren't designed yet for the cartoon.
Oh,
so imagine I had all those factors, so it was pretty brutal, yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Well, it was my room world stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting that done in 2 months, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Okay, so we'll take one more question, and then we have to wrap up. You, sir, in the hat, you get the last one.
Is there a particular project or character or anything you guys would dream of working on?
I've worked on a lot of dream gigs. You know, not to say that in a weird way, but I'm content, man. If I didn't get any more work, you know, I wouldn't mind working at Home Depot at this point to make money for my kids and family. Yeah. Although I don't prefer that. I'm just saying. It's been pretty crazy roller coaster ride for me, honestly.
No, I agree. I mean, I've gotten to work on most of, like, my, you know, favorite comic book characters. I'd love to do maybe, like, a New Mutants run or something. I haven't done any of those, like, officially. But, yeah, outside of that, I've been really lucky to, like...
I'm picturing your version of Warlock right now. Somebody should start that letter-writing campaign. Maybe me.
Yeah, I've gotten to work on almost every property that I've loved, like Star Wars, Marvel, DC... Like, I'm really, really lucky.
Barbie.
Barbie. No, I didn't work on Barbie. I've been super lucky. I can't really think of anything that I haven't got to touch.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit.
I would like to do more comic book work, like interiors. I feel like there's a lot that I can still offer that hasn't been seen yet. But I'm considered cartoony, so I don't get to do a lot of the mainstream stuff, only when special projects come up. So I would like the opportunity to do some mainstream stuff, you know, in my house style.
Alrighty, well, that brings us to the end of the Meet the Pros panel. If you guys would give our guests a big round of applause.